From the campus of the University of Hawaii at Manoa, this is the Center of Southeast Asian Studies Speaker Series Podcast. Podcasts, video streaming, MP3 downloads, and more are available at cseashawaii.org. So hello, my name is Pahol, the PR coordinator. Mahalo for coming. So I'm going to read just a little info about the talk. Professor Paka has so graciously decided to come do with us. So welcome to the speaker series. Ranzai is a folk dance drama form of entertainment originating from the West Sumatra and performed by Minangkabau ethnic group of that region. It's rarely seen outside of Indonesia. The only university program in the West to offer Ranzai performances is the University of Hawaii at Manoa, and presents the third Ranzai production in 10 years this season. Directed by Professor Kirsten Paka, a specialist in Southeast Asian theater and dance, The Gentile Sabai will be performed in English at Kennedy Theater from February 3rd to the 12th, 2012. Free pre-show chats are scheduled for 7 p.m. for the February 4th and 11th performances. On-stage seating available on first-come, first-served basis at the performance to all ticket holders. Additionally, we're talking about there's a symposium coming up at the East-West Center, the Minangkabau Symposium. It's Sunday the 27th on January from 2 to 4, and there's also a Ranzai exhibit on the fourth floor at Hamilton Library. So without further ado, I'll let Professor Paka take it.
So I had planned to make this kind of like a talk story session, and most of you already know about Ranzai anyway, so I don't have to do like a long presentation on this. We did select the students, we did select the teachers and the play about 2 years back. So typically there's like a two year preparation period before we even step through the arrival doors of international arrivals at Honolulu Airport, right? So I had, Pakatik has been the first teacher in 2001, when we did the very first Ranzai ever. And so it was really nice that he was able to come again 10 years later to the second one. The second teacher, his name is Jasbial Jamaluddin. He is a musician and silat master, and this is his very first time to be outside of Indonesia, really, to undertake such a program. So for him, it's a real interesting cultural setting to be teaching Ranzai and silat and music. Let me tell you a little bit about the play and why we selected Sabai Nan Avenue, which means refined or genteel Sabai. We had two other plays previously that had male heroes. The first one was Umbuik Mudo and the Magic Flute. It was also a folktale from the same kind of canon of Minangkabau folktales. And the second one was Mage Manandin, again a male hero, similar kind of genre of folktale. And so Sabai Nan Alui we picked because we wanted a play that actually features a female protagonist, a female heroine hero. And so there's not that many really. So Pakatik has, you know, have been very proactive in picking this play, saying, you know, it would be great for a audience in the US, in Hawaii, to have a female character being the main character in the play. And so he rewrote the script for us. What, like, we started 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago now, you know, bringing it down to basically a 6-hour play, which is the standard length of these dramatic texts, a little less than a two-hour play. We're at 100 minutes right now. And so I was also very fortunate to have collaborators in Indonesia who helped with the translation process. As everybody knows, translation is typically a many pronged attempt to get close to the original in terms of content. In the case of Ranzai, also be dealing with rhyme and meter and poetry and pantun or like proverbs. And so all of that took a lot of work to translate. And then when we first started rehearsing, we still didn't have it in rhyme. We had good content, we had nice language, we didn't have any rhyme yet. And thankfully, one of my students, who's also my assistant director, Joe Winsky, he's just a wizard with rhyming. And he took one look at the script and said, I can do this in a week. and it blew everybody out of the water because, you know, typically it takes a long time to get something rhymed nicely, and he really did it. Well, it took him 10 days, not 1 week. But, you know, he did it in an amazing, fast amount of time. And I'm so happy to actually have it reflect the rhythm and the rhyme and the meter of the original Yunnan language, now also very close to English. So I think this is the best script we've had in the last three cycles. Okay, the training process we started, I started teaching 2 semesters ago what I call the Rwandai bootcamp class, just get people in shape and familiarize them a little bit with basic martial arts, basic sila, basic Rwandai movement and percussion. And then when the teachers arrived, we had a sila class, a Rwandai class, and a music class for the general student population. And then from those people, we chose the people who would actually end up in the cast. And then we've basically been rehearsing since October 1st, so a solid 5 months by the time we open. Okay, so I think that's all the background information I was going to give you. I want to see if Pakatik has something to say, maybe, and Yasi can help translate.
Selamat siang, semua. Terima kasih, Christine Volta.
Thanks to Christine.
Pertama sekali untuk Christine Volta. Yang kedua untuk UH, Asian Studies. Ya.
The Center.
Yang telah mempercayai saya untuk ini yang ke, untuk diri saya yang kedua kali.
For trusting me to come here for the second time.
Program Rwandai yang ketiga.
This is the third, but this is my second.
Saya sangat berbahagia sekali, bangga sekali.
I'm very proud and very happy.
Karena 20 jam terbang dari kampung saya.
Because 20 hours on an airplane.
Ada sebuah university namanya UH. Yang sangat ya percaya dan sangat berminat untuk mengembangkan kebudayaan saya sendiri dari Minangkabau.
So 20 hours flight in this little place and this excellent university that actually show interest in the culture that I belong to.
Kenapa saya sangat bangga? Karena di Minangkabau.
The reason why I'm very proud is because in Minangkabau,
Rwandai adalah cerminan dari kehidupan masyarakat di desa-desa.
Because in West Sumatra, Rwandai is really is reflection of the daily life of people in Minangkabau.
Bagaimana mereka berteman?
How they form friendship?
Bagaimana berayah beribu?
How the relationship between parents and children?
Itu semuanya dengan lingkungan akan bisa dilihat di dalam Rwandai.
All those things can be found in Rwandai.
Mudah-mudahan UH mungkin bisa melanjutkan terus program kerjasama ini. Saya sangat bangga sekali.
I'm hoping that the relationship and the collaboration can be sustained and continue in the future.
Terima kasih, barangkali hanya itu yang bisa. Selamat siang.
Okay, I also brought Jillian, who is a cast member of the called Anak Rwandai, or Children of Rwandai. She's been one of the most positive and hardworking students in the cast. She is what we call our gore. She's really the head gore, the lead gore. Gore means the person who calls the shots, really, who calls all the cues for the dances, who uses vocal patterns to time everything together, to tell the dancers when to start, when to clap, when to do everything, basically. And she is also our MC, and she's been in class from the very beginning, all the classes. So I just wanted to ask her to say a little bit what the process was like for this one.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Okay.
Come on, call.
Kamu bernyanyi dengan saya.
So, like Kirsten said, we started learning this way back in August, and it was right away, I fell in love with the form right away because it brings together a lot of things, but I love dancing, martial arts, singing, acting, but it was definitely a process of slow at the beginning, I think for everyone in the class, of learning like how to get in the positions and being really low, and Pak Jas and Pak Atik would show us, I was in both the Rondai class and the Silat class, the fighting class, so they would demonstrate and then we would follow, and it was definitely learning through imitation, and the same thing went with the Gore, the calls. It was really nice that we would learn the dance, and Pak Jas usually would call the dances and let us know when we were supposed to move. And then we would all get an opportunity if we wanted to try calling the movements. And it was something that I just gravitated towards, and I have the honor of doing thanks to it.
She had an amazing timing from the very first time she did it. She just got it right away. So I was really impressed.
Thanks. And then moving into rehearsals, that's when I think for a lot of us in the cast, it became really just fun and even more interesting and engaging, because from about the first day, I think we sat down with the script and read through it, and we got to learn even more about the culture, the Minang culture, and we really, it was, there's so many opportunities for questions that we'd say, what does this term mean? What is this food they're talking about? What is this exchange about? Is this part of the culture? And so I think that really helped us understand where the play came from, and has helped us really embrace the script and become one with the script. I think beyond learning the movements and learning the calls and learning the form, the last couple months especially have become about really becoming a group and working together, instead of just being isolated and focusing on, is my hand down, am I engaging my core, and all this stuff that we thought about during the boot camp phase. Now it's, am I moving at the same speed as everyone? Am I focused? Are my eyes in the right place? Am I looking up at the audience and instead of looking down at my feet? All of this stuff that's really starting to make us become a group that's working together. And I think you can hear it. I don't know, out in the audience, but I know in the circle in these last few weeks of rehearsal, you can hear just everything really coming together, and the top walk when we slap our pants is louder and more together. So it's kind of that magical thing that Kirsten talked about. How did you...
I had promised it would happen later in the process, and it's right now happening. We're right at the magical moment where the thing pulls together. And because for so many months, really, it's all about learning technical skills. And at some point, when you actually reach a level of technical...
really master technique, you can move beyond the technique. And once you transcend the technique, you know, the magic of the circle pulls together and it just becomes bigger than the sum of the parts. And just in the last few days, so that's really kicked in, and I just can watch it kind of grow. It's really wonderful to see it indeed happening when I predicted it would happen. So, yeah, and the benefit of having done it twice.
I think everything about our training has led us to this point, because we didn't ever just focus on one element in isolation. Even if you were just in the Rondai class learning the dances, we had Nicole come to our classes and sing, so we always had a musician in our classes, which was really nice, and we got to learn the songs. Even if we weren't in the music class, we would spend some classes just learning the songs so that we could understand how to move better. In the CLAP class, I remember some days we would just sit down and Pak Atik and Pak Jas would tell us about the tradition of CLAP and how it came to be and how you started learning from someone, and heirlooms getting passed down. So that was a big part of it. I mean, we're lucky enough to have a group of people who love working together, but we're also lucky enough to have a training process that brought all the elements together. So yeah, that's about what I have to say.
Great. Thank you. Okay, I'd like to introduce Nicole, who's also a part of the cast. She is our supreme songstress. I want to say godsend singer who really pushed the whole musical aspect of Blind Guide to much higher level.
Because
she's a wonderful singer, and she's really embraced the music and the singing tradition of Blind Guide from the very start. I remember the first time when we didn't have enough musicians yet, and Nicole kind of offhandedly told us, like, I'd be interested in learning the songs. And I asked her, so would you like to give us a sample of whatever song? She was like, well, I can hum the song number, whatever, Dayang Dayinit for you. I don't know the words, but I can kind of hum the melody. And she did like perfectly after having heard it like, twice.
Yeah,
and her teeth like turned around from the other end of the room and just walked right at her like, you'll be my singer. So it was like instantly she was cast as the lead singer because of just she had absorbed right away not just the tonality and not just the actual melody but actually the quality of the song right from the beginning. So thank you. So tell us how all that happened.
Wow. I actually thought I would be a dancer on the show, but as Kirsten just said, I wrote on my audition form that I'd be interested in learning the music because I just really, really wanted to be a part of the show in any way, shape, or form, even if it just meant sitting in the back with the musicians and playing a small drum or something. She emailed me, I hardly even had time to get to a computer, and she had already emailed me, like, can you sing? I said, I have no formal training, but I can carry a tune. And, like Kirsten said, the next day I kind of was like,
audition.
It was something like, I think it was something like, la, 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 you're in.
No.
There wasn't much.
That's all you need to hear.
Yeah, exactly. So, and then from there, it was, I didn't get to go to music classes right away because I had a scheduling conflict, so I just got, like, MP3s of Pakati singing all the songs that I had to learn. And so I had to learn most of the songs kind of on my own, which was, that was really, tricky. It was just a lot of time listening, and then I get into music class, and of course, I don't know how familiar you are with the form of Rondai, but everything's changed. So it still does frequently. So, but having that base there already in place was very helpful, and then because I had 2 months of music classes to catch up on, so. And then it was just a lot of repetition, singing the songs over and over. We also translated the songs. So we learned the songs first in Minang, and then there was a translation of all of the songs, but the people who are singing in the show actually made sure that the phrasing would work and that sort of thing. Just sometimes sounds so beautiful in Minang because that's the language it's written in, and then when you change it to English, some of like the vowel sounds are a little harder and that sort of thing. So we would just kind of rework some of the language of some of the songs, and that got us to where we are. Sabai na 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 na
counts, two, three.
Taking this very esoteric art form out and showing it to the general public. I wish the heck we had the money to tour you. I mean, if maybe the next director can write into the next director's grant some money to travel this thing, because I think it would really feel great if we at least take the coast. I'd like to take the East Coast too, but I mean, I really think this is something where Hawaii shines, so that's my comment. My question is, please remind us of the times and dates of the shows on campus.
Huge pile of flyers.
Okay, huge pile of flyers. Okay.
You can take a bunch and pass them off.
Not did we pay for printing these? Wow! They're nice.
You paid for their t-shirts. You paid for everything else.
You can also find all this information.
What about students, huh?
You can also find all the information on both our website and East West Center
thanks
and your
Paul's
website.
Thanks to paperless office. We are the only ones who still have flyers. but everything is on the awesome Center for Southeast Asian World Studies webpage, which I really think came a long way. Awesome. All the information is there. We'll do email blasts and Facebook and social media stuff going out like on a daily basis from now on forward, because we do open 2 weeks exactly from tonight. Mm-hmm. Other questions, observations, comments? Yeah.
I'm curious about, it seems to me that this is within Sumatra and within Indonesia more broadly, possibly even Malaysia. So much of this seems to be quite unique to the Minang, but are there other groups that practice the trouser
dance
beating
is truly unique in the world, and only Rwanda has it.
And
there's some Samoan body percussion, and there's other things, but pants slapping, that sophisticated musical way is unique in the world.
And the stories are they part of a broader literature, or are
they're
any specifically Minang literature?
They're particularly Minang epics, folk tales, and folklore. And they are not necessarily shared even with the next ethnic group over, like the Batak. Mm. So they are uniquely Minang. And there's only very few stories that are maybe more pan-Indonesian that have been integrated. And there's some modern literature that has been adapted to Rwandan. But basically, it's their own Minang-specific folklore and literature that is used in Rwandan.
And do you have a way of knowing more about how it evolved?
Rwanda?
About its history? Yeah, if it's within the
culture.
Yeah,
there's a whole book on it. Tell
me it's in your library.
It's in your library. Yeah, so... And
it's being put in the cave.
I know, it's actually
floor.
In the cave. In a nutshell, it did develop out of three things. Silat, or Silat, Pakaba, which is storytelling tradition, and Sabuang Jodendang, which is the singing and flute tradition. And those three elements came together and kind of were the foundation of Rwandai. And then later on, some Bangsawan, Malaysian acting opera troupes toured, and then some of the acting elements were kind of inspired by that. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Where does the qigong come in?
What?
There are movements that are clearly qigong.
Oh, they're not qigong. They're silat.
They're silat.
And you know, some martial arts do share a lot of like maybe similarities.
So silat then is where they come from.
Silat is the martial, is the indigenous martial arts of kind of the Malay world, and okay. The Minangkabau call it silat. So that's just the okay. local
and
name of
then that. Then that in turn
and
probably
that
has,
is the foundation of all the movement repertoire of all yeah. the Gwanda.
And that probably has some influence from Chinese qigong earlier.
To some extent, there is some overlap, especially with like animal styles.
Yeah.
Because there's two silat styles that are featured in our performance. One is silat Halimao, which is a tiger silat mm-hmm. style, and then the other one is silat Tuo, which is like an older, like one of the oldest silat styles. But there's all kinds of other styles, and they have, I think, at least 12 major mm-hmm. silat styles in the region of West Sumatra alone. Mm-hmm. There's hundreds, maybe thousands, all over Indonesia. And each one is, of course, very unique to its region. But of course, martial arts being martial arts, you know, there's so many ways you can punch and kick and sweep. Mm-hmm. So there, of course, is shared repertoire. Mm-hmm. I would not necessarily make the step and say it's influenced from the
other. Yeah, I was thinking when you said that, because it's something we find all over Southeast Asia, all over. In Okinawa, for instance,
yeah.
So it may have developed simultaneously all over.
I think this is probably like a multi-origin kind of situation where it's, and then of course as it develops and you see other forms, there's probably some cross-influence, but it's probably, as the Minang say, it's indigenous to the Minangkabau culture.
Certainly, you can,
Kristen, yes. You were saying that you selected the story because it's one of the few that has a female as a heroine, which I find kind of interesting in the Minangkabau society.
Yeah. Well, as a very active, there's female main characters, but typically they are fought over, they're not fighting themselves. Yeah. So that is a unique angle that actually the female character here is taking on a very active role that is typically reserved for male characters. It should really be her brother who does all the revenge taking, but he's a good for nothing little kid and he doesn't do it, so she comes out and does it. Yeah. So basically, there are female heroes, but they don't, not too many of them actually get fighting bad guys. Yeah. And despite the fact that it's matrilineal, women are not necessarily groomed to be fighters. You know, they have power in other ways. But she is definitely unusual within the Minangkabau culture.
And it's rather a tradition that grew out more of the male.
I mean, Rwanda initially was all male because it was used as a teaching tool in Surau, where the young boys would go to get educated after they were kicked out of the mother's house, right?
And did that switch over, that incorporation of women into your performance, happen during Kathy's time?
Good question.
Ya, yeah. Kapan itu perempuan mulai masuk di Rwanda?
Setelah tahun 63 berdirinya.
Tahun 1960.
Belum ada ya, berdiri sekolah Koka.
When the public school system started teaching
konservatori, isi pedang panjang sekarang.
Di ASCII.
Iya ASCII, sekarang menjadi ASCII. Tahun 70. Dia sudah mulai belajar randai, sudah mulai mempublikasikan.
So 70s the female started.
And was there resistance?
Ada ini enggak? Ada semacam ketegangan di masyarakat perempuan bisa atau tidak bisa?
Sangat lama sekali Nini Ahmad menerima.
Yeah, it's karena teks.
Sekarang gimana?
Setelah dijelaskan secara filosofi, Nini Ahmad menerima.
So right now they're okay with it, but it took them a long time to really make them understand it's okay for female to do this.
So the tradition of the male dancers and the randais goes back, in terms of documentation, something about that.
The oldest existent video clip of an all-male randai group is from 1932, some Dutch scholars.
And
it's like grainy black and white, you can find it online. Mm-hmm. That's the only video we have.
Right.
You know, there's descriptions of it, like all the way to the 1920s, but not much before that. I mean, silat, all the elements are for sure hundreds of years old, but it coming together into what then became known as randai is not until the turn of last century. It's a 20th century thing.
Oh, okay.
all the elements of it are much older, but coming together and creating this new composite uniform is 1900s.
Oh, I was just stretching.
Oh, okay. You had a question. Paul, what's your question?
Probably the least knowledgeable rod diapers in this whole group.
I know, this is like already symposium.
Yeah, this is really awesome. You know, you might look back and kind of chuckle about when you first started doing these and the kind of technological changes that have happened.
Oh, yeah.
What are some of those changes, and how do you use technology now, both for teaching as a teaching tool, but also as an outreach platform?
Yeah. And it goes even way beyond that. Like in the old days, you know, I have to fly to Sumatra, walk to their house, hope they're there, sit down for weeks and weeks and discuss the whole thing. Now I can text him from here and say, can we shorten the script here? Can we, can you please fill out this visa application and fax me your whatever, electronic signature, whatever. That's a whole different way of doing the prep work, for sure, and it really helped a lot to be
and
able
next
to
time
just,
like, on Facebook.
And next time
it's
on
Facebook.
Structurally, not the elements, right? But a lot of people say structurally reminds me of other art forms in Southeast Asia, other performance forms in Southeast Asia. Of course, I'm familiar with Vietnam, and the fact that even in the 20th century, they were being created from other forms. For instance, that guy Le Ma from southern Vietnam is really a 20th century phenomenon that has been brought together with other
forms. That's a really shared history throughout Southeast Asia.
Yeah. However, a sad note, and now as you know, Tsing Nguyen is studying Cai Lu, and she's had to really search high and low for people who continue the tradition because traditions like that are under assault from MTV, YouTube.
That's probably a shared problem.
I'm just worried that Randai, that young people in Sumatra will continue to be interested in watching, performing, and sustaining it, and that it won't become a sort of a... I mean, will centers for Southeast Asian studies be the places that people can
only
see?
Place we have.
Sekarang, bagaimana minat generasi muda di Sumatera Barat tentang Randai? Soalnya kan beliau memberi perbandingan dengan Vietnam, di mana seni-seni tua itu sudah diambil alih oleh MTV, jadi semua orang juga tertarik lagi dengan budaya sendiri. Ada fenomena yang sama atau sedikit beda?
Untuk tiga kota besar di Kota Padang, Kota Bukit Tinggi, Kota Payakumbuh. Di tengah kota itu, di sekeliling kota memang ada berkurang.
Okay, so in the big cities, you said like Padang, Bukit Tinggi, Perempanya, you can see slightly decrease.
Tapi ada untuk 16 kabupaten yang lain.
But 16 regions, other 16 regions.
Okay, itu sangat banyak sekali. Si Junjung 180 randai.
So it's in one region is 160 groups. Wow. So it's actually bigger on the
kabupaten 50 kota ada 87.
And in 50 kota have 87 groups.
Groups?
Yeah, yeah.
Di negeri saya, satu negeri saja. Seper 18 dari kabupaten negeri saya. Itu ada 24 grup randai.
Yeah, in his village, which is really small, it's 18. And he said it's only like 1/18 of the whole region. So when he's saying that, the bigger city is taken over a little bit by MTV, by the smaller regions, actually, they're thriving.
So still thriving. That's wonderful.
So the rural areas are really...
Because it's unusual.
Generasi muda kampung itu sekaligus belajar adat. Karena di dalam randai adat di sini.
So he said that they use randai actually to teach their cultures, the adat. The adat.
Sekaligus silat.
Yeah, the silat, and the singing, and the telling the legends, and things like that.
In one troop, berapa orang? How many
satu,
people?
Dalam satu kelompok biasanya berapa orang anggotanya?
Tidak ada yang di bawah 20.
Yes, above 20.
Ada 50, ada 80, ada tergantung.
Yang paling besar?
Malah 20 to make it like a strong.
di zaman saya main randai, satu kelompok kami itu punya cerita 12.
He said that during his time, when he was in a prime time performer, their repertoire is about 12 stories that they can perform.
Jadi ketika orang datang ingin mengundang kami main randai, mereka mau cerita apa?
Oh, so they have a menu, basically. Which one are you going to perform? So they have 12 there, and they can choose.
Saya bisa semua. Jadi dubalang, jadi raja, jadi apa saja. Saya pernah jadi perempuan.
Jadi itu ke female character.
Tahun 63 saya jadi perempuan.
Jadi even yeah. Like female roles when he was younger, I didn't have a beard.
Well, yeah, that brings up another question because I know you mentioned that because of the academies like ASCII and ASCII, that changes started happening. That women could do more things, because I know that at ASCII, when you studied a dance form, you studied all the forms, whether you got to perform it or not.
Right.
You know, so I know that those changes happened, but before that time, so he was saying that he's done female roles in randai, so before women were included, does that mean that it was an all-male troupe, including
Bujangadi.
Yeah.
Because you know, in Jogja, that's how it was. Like, all the female roles.
There's still a small smattering of groups who do all male, and they have Bujangadi, but it's kind of, that's part of the tradition that's kind of going away.
Are there any all female groups?
Yes, they are.
So
I know, it's better. I actually have a question. Yes. Yeah.
How about singers? Like when it was all male cast,
the singers were also male.
That's what.
Because it's a separate tradition that got integrated.
Yeah,
female singers.
Yeah, sesudah tahun 70 itu selalu perempuan. Sudah banyak yang perempuan.
Famous female singers.
Kalau saya di mana saja, saya hafal lebih dari 600 nyanyi Minangkabau, saya hafal.
He can remember sing about 600 song. He has memorized about 600 song. Oh, pertanyaan saya, kalau yang semuanya perempuan, yang jadi laki-laki perempuan?
Yeah.
Oh, so it's actually like related to your question, that this is a female group, and it's female playing the male roles.
Pernah saya membuat randai di Padang di dekat Indarung, itu semua pemain perempuan.
So he actually had a
jadi ketika dia berperan laki-laki, kita buatkan tumis.
Easy.
Dan tidak ada masalah ya dengan masalah.
Ini dibuang, tidak boleh pakai anting, tidak boleh pakai
ini. Iya,
sorry.
I want to ask Julian and Nicole what it was like to do your practices outside versus working out inside.
I loved being outside.
I prefer it outside.
It feels like it's how it's supposed to be.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, Kirsten was always telling us in terms of stepping and stepping correctly, not stomping on the floor, that you step lightly because they perform outside, so you have to be like step gingerly.
Seeing with your feet.
Yeah, seeing with your feet. Yeah, so
yeah. I feel the same way even just when I'm singing. I have a big voice, and so I like to use it.
It feels like something to be shared. So when you're outside, it's so great when people are walking by, and even a couple of the cast members that I practiced outside a little over break, and there'd be people walking, and they're like, what are you doing? In tour groups. So it's nice.
Yeah, I mean, the entire class actually was held outside in the beginning.
Yeah.
And then eventually the rehearsals are kind of moved inside, because in rehearsal context, you need just have a little bit more focus and you can't be distracted by all these passerby asking us about the context. You know, we needed to have like a space where we can really focus on the work. But the class, it was actually really fun to have it outside.
Yeah, I saw you sweating out there a lot. Yeah,
thank you, Robin. Bye.
I just wanted to ask, is there any room within the performance which seems to be so tightly scripted and so tightly timed? Do they ever sort of step out and improvise? Or
and I've opened the door to the cast to do that, and boy, do they take the opportunity.
So how does it
happen? It's kind of like a rap artist here. Really good performers can improvise on the spot in either their rhyme language. and just make it up on the spot.
Yeah.
You know, like kind of like in pantomime form, yes. And so it can be anything between, you know, well, this is the general scene and there's set phrases, but then the actual dialogue, people will just kind of go with the flow. To, let's say, you have a 3-hour show prepared that you can normally do when you go to a host. And they say, oh, well, my uncle really wants to sing too, and can you just do 2 hours? So we can give him 1 hour to, like, you know, sing. And then, you know, the group will get together real quickly. It's like, okay, well, we'll cut this scene and we'll shorten this song, and then this other song will have to summarize all the stuff that we don't show, and then the singers will just go to it. In the meantime, all this happened, and they display, you know, and then summarize it up. Or another improvisation could be like somebody like me is in the audience, and of course that just asks for commentary, right? So there will be some kind of joke and verse and stuff made up about the stranger that's kind of come around and have this equipment all over the place and is asking strange questions and whatever, right? So, and anything else, latest corruption scandal down the village, you know, we'll have kind of like a little quip about it.
And is that something you're working into the performance?
We are, but I'm going to have to put the lid on it now. I just love it. You know, a couple of my actors, they came basically every night and they had new lines somewhere. They in rhyme, in meter, and whatever, right? But
it's funny.
And it's fun. It's really fun for us because, you know, it just keeps it fresh.
And
but at some point, I have to start, okay, we're going to settle now because I don't want any big surprises on opening time. Yeah.
It's interesting what you mentioned about the little commentary, because in certain Vietnamese forms, that's one of the ways that, because they're peasant forms, it's one of the ways that peasants can make their comments about the powerful in society.
You can tell them about that.
Make them Buddhist monks, for instance, and, which you don't want people to do. So,
when are you going to be at Shangri-La?
February 3 o'clock.
I have one more question. Pat said he had a menu of the troupe would have a menu of plays they could do. But I know in Wyatt, like in Wyandot Theater, when you show up, sometimes they're like, "Oh yeah, tonight you're Gatugocho." You're like, "What?" is it a usual performance like that? Because you know, when it comes to the West, there's like months of rehearsal and the story is set and the performers are set. But I know that in Javanese theater, it'll change. It's like, oh yeah, we're going to do this story, but we're going to add this part in and you're going to be this character. And you find out that night. Does it work that way in Rwanda?
Yeah, kalau di Rwanda kan ada repertoire yang pakai misalnya 12 gitu ya. Tapi terus diundang. Tapi yang meminta nanti bilang, oh kami mau ini dan mau ditambah dengan ceritanya begini, bisa dimodifikasi sedikit nggak ceritanya?
Ah, itu sambil pergi di atas mobil juga.
He said we can do it on the way there, in the bus. That's so used to it.
Thank you, thank you for your support.
I just have to you'll find out. Your actors have to run on.
I know.
Okay.
Take some flyers.
Yeah. Soalnya kami diajar dengan banyak kata, tidak hanya script saja. Jadi kami dilatih menghafal ini.
So he basically said we were trained not to just memorize like a one set of story, but you can actually move the stories from one to the other to fit the request of the people. So you just have to like, okay, remember in this, let's move it to this. So
the opening night I'm going to request we're going to do Hamlet. Okay. Okay, people can do it.
Oops.
Okay, like change of plans.
That's right.
Nicole can do it. She'll just sing and there's trouble in this kingdom.
That's right.
Ini orang yang luar biasa.
Yeah, he's incredible.
Dia masuk kelas musik sudah pertengahan.
Yeah.
Saya dengar suaranya, saya kata Christine, nah ini cocok. Yeah. Rupanya dia jadi penyanyi pertama.
Yeah, so it's a blessing to honor. Yeah.
Okay, well, any other questions? Our 5 audience,
four,
the best audience.
Thank you.
Yay! Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mahalo for listening to the Center for Southeast Asian Studies Speaker Series podcast. If you would like to download, comment on, or share this podcast, as well as subscribe to our weekly announcement listserv, please visit us at csehawaii.org.